This is Radio Sputnik.
You're listening to World in Focus Weekly.
With Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott.
Your weekly roundup of all the top stories from World in Focus.
This is World in Focus Weekly, our weekly discussion show, looking at some of the bigger stories we've been covering this week on Radio Sputnik's daily global current affairs show, World in Focus. Hello and welcome to World in Focus Weekly. I'm Carolyn Scott, and joining Jack and I this week, we have World in Focus's very own Matthew Aiton. Now, Jack, at the beginning of the week, you took a look at Donald Trump, his rhetoric being ramped up toward North Korea. Is that correct?
Yes, that would be a very succinct way of putting it, Carolyn. On Monday, we were looking at US President Donald Trump, who was speaking about North Korea in a series of statements after he'd been visiting Japan on the Sunday. And he'd been making sort of comments about North Korea then. And then, well, it sounded like he was ramping it up, as you say, later in the week. I think we can hear a report on that now.
It's not a good situation now that I see it, including with our intelligence briefings. We have problems that a lot of people have no idea how bad they are, how serious they are, not only internationally, but when you come right here. Well, I mean, obviously, North Korea is a big problem, and we will deal with that very strongly.
United States President Donald Trump speaking during a news conference yesterday at the White House with his Canadian counterpart, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, the first such meeting between the two leaders. During that, it's probably worth noting that Mr. Trudeau struck a fairly cordial note, perhaps unsurprisingly, given his somewhat careful positioning over this past year towards the incoming Trump administration.
The last thing Canadians expect is for me to come down and lecture another country on how they choose to govern themselves. My role and our responsibility is to continue to govern in such a way that reflects Canadians' approach and be a positive example in the world.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau speaking there at the White House yesterday. But, of course, the headline comments from that joint press conference concerned North Korea and a potential ramping up in U.S. foreign policy against the isolated dictatorship. Why? Well, Trump's comments came hot on the heels of similarly bold words on Sunday when Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe met him in Florida. During that meeting, news emerged that North Korea had launched a missile in the direction of Japan, a missile which only travelled around 500 kilometres before landing in the Sea of Japan. Obviously, the missile was only ever intended to land in the sea, but the timing and the direction in which it was fired was patently intended as a provocation, and a provocation the likes of which North Korea has form on making before. That incident at the weekend prompted condemnation from across the international community, but it also led to President Trump making these comments regarding the relationship between Washington and Tokyo.
I just want everybody to understand and fully know that the United States of America stands behind Japan, its great ally, 100%.
Now, those comments have inspired a great deal of discussion in and of themselves as to what exactly 100% really means. But combined with Trump's pledge yesterday to deal with North Korea very strongly, you could be forgiven for thinking something new might be on the horizon in terms of US foreign policy towards North Korea. In fairness to the administration in Washington, there are few states in the world who so openly saber-rattle and call for all-out war with the United States as does the Kim Jong-un administration, as is evident from this somewhat typical speech by Kim Jong-un last year. For the greater good, it's time for the United States to step down for the reign of North Korea. Anyone who stands in our way will fall with the United States. The attack will begin soon. We will no longer stand idly by, waiting for the United States to give in to our demands. North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un speaking last year. Now, most commentators would argue that those sorts of noises are more for the benefit of the North Korean population than for the US, especially given that North Korea's military capabilities, in large part due to its isolated position, are decades behind those of the US. Pressure, too, from North Korea's closest neighbours, China, could make things more complicated for everyone involved. Ultimately, because of all of that, the chances of North Korea attempting to fail face down the United States look pretty slim. But if the aggressive rhetoric and rogue missile tests continue to emanate from Pyongyang, the question now is whether or not Donald Trump has the temperament to do as his predecessors did in not poking that particular wasp's nest.
A report was from earlier this week, and Jack, this wasn't the only big story this week about North Korea, really, was it?
No, arguably there was an even bigger story related to North Korea, which was that the Kim Jong-nam, who is the eldest son of the late Kim Jong-il, had died en route to a hospital in Malaysia, just outside Kuala Lumpur yesterday. I'm reading an old script, okay? I've given away what I'm doing here. The exact details were quite thin on the ground, but then I think it sort of became apparent that he had been poisoned, probably by two agents from North Korea as well. A bit of background on who Kim Jong-nam is for people who don't know as well. He was, from about 1994 to 2001, widely considered to be the sort of heir apparent to his father, Kim Jong-il, and would be the next leader of Korea. So in a sort of alternate universe, he could very well have ended up being the leader of North Korea. However, he kind of fell out of favour with his family after a botched attempt to secretly enter Japan using a fake passport to visit Tokyo Disneyland in 2001. That didn't go down well, and he's ended up living in exile ever since then. But he has been a critic of his family's regime and an advocate for reform as well, so you can
see. Seems a bit harsh. The guy just wanted to go to Disneyland, right?
There must have been more to it than that.
I suspect that might be a simplistic reading of what happened. But.
And going back to what we were talking about in that report there, I mean, it's not exactly surprising that the US and North Korea have a very shaky relationship. What's particularly new this week about the US-North Korea relations?
Well, as you very succinctly said at the top of the show, it's a ramping up of rhetoric, probably, is how I would put it. That's what the issue is, because obviously previous presidents of the United States, and all of them, have taken issue with North Korea and considered it an enemy, considered it dangerous. And in recent years, they've sort of been building missile programs, the threat of building a nuclear program and so on. But there's never really been any kind of actual threat to invade or to militarily do anything about North Korea that I'm particularly aware of. It tends to just be rhetoric. However, Donald Trump did seem to be saying, as we heard in that report there, that he intends to treat it seriously and actually take some sort of action.
I mean, it's hard to believe, really, that North Korea could actually constitute a viable threat when it's surrounded by, completely geostrategically exasperated, surrounded by the US's allies, Japan. I think it's about 55,000 Marines stationed in Okinawa. Obviously, South Korea, I think about 36,000 Marines stationed there. 60% of the US's naval fleet is based in the Philippines.
Well, the North Korea's army as well is, in terms of its technology, is behind the US by several decades, really. The other thing is as well, that when they're actually making these provocations, they don't seem to be particularly provocative in the traditional sense. I mean, for example, that missile that was sent in the direction of Japan, obviously Shinzo Abe wasn't even in Japan, and neither was Donald Trump. They were in Florida at the time. And it ditched in the sea about halfway towards Japan. It was obviously not intended to land there. I never seem to get the impression that North Korea particularly wants to actually have a war, but perhaps for the benefit of its own population.
It's a strategy of brinkmanship, pushing things to the brink and seeing what reaction you get back.
I don't think North Korea are the only ones that are guilty of that.
And of course, the timing of Donald Trump's statements this week was because the Japanese leader, Shinzo Abe, was in America. So it's very much confirming the US's support for Japan as much as it was an attack on North Korea.
Yeah, what did you make of that, Matthew? You're a scholar of the world of Japan. When Donald Trump said he's 100% behind his ally Japan, did you take that to mean the way he worded it at the time, or did you read something more into that? Because 100% behind an ally is a pretty major statement.
Well, no, I think he meant it. The United States has always been 100% behind Japan ever since 1945, when Japan surrendered to the Allies. It was occupied by the United States. Its institutions were ripped up. Democracy in inverted commas, was installed. And every administration since then has pledged an unyielding support to Japan. As I said, about 55,000 Marines are stationed there.
Well, they don't have their own army, do they?
No. Well, no, they have, which is still the legacy of the occupation in the Constitution, what's known as the pacifist Article 9, which says that Japan is not allowed to maintain war-waging capability, but that's slowly eroding now anyway. And I think there's a great use that Donald Trump sees in Japan as well, and that it is found in that slow remilitarization. He sees it as a nice counterbalance, if you will, to what he, and it seems like many of the hawks in his administration, see as a rising China threat. I think Japan proves geostrategically useful in that way, particularly while it's going through this process of remilitarization.
Well, I think we're going to take a quick break now, but we shall be back in just a few moments.
You're listening to World in Focus Weekly
with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott.
Your weekly roundup of all the top stories from World in Focus.
Coming up on the programme, we'll be looking at the rather strange situation in American federal laws, which means that those caught plotting terror attacks do not get charged with terror offences. That'll be just in a few minutes.
Radio Sputnik.
Capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Ray Bradbury, the author of Fahrenheit 451, once wrote, "If you don't want a man unhappy politically, don't give him two sides to a question to worry him. Give him one. Better yet, give him none. Let him forget there's such a thing as war." Level Talk program has been devised to offer two sides to any argument. We don't want to make up your mind for you, but we do want to be sure that you know both sides of any story. Tune in to Level Talk.
Mainstream news coverage catches the big moments.
60 people confirmed dead.
Brexit means Brexit.
We will make America great again.
But what about the stories behind the stories?
The untold stories hidden beneath the mainstream.
Several hundred guys on voluntary starvation.
Intelligence agencies cannot admit they make a mistake.
If they send me back, I will be killed myself.
Sputnik's daily global current affairs programme, World in Focus, with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott.
Join us live from Sputnik Studios in Edinburgh, Scotland, every weekday from 4 p.m. in the UK, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and 7 o'clock in Moscow.
Hey, this is Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker and muckraker from bradblog.com. Join me for the Bradcast. Every day, right here on Radio Sputnik, we'll have investigative interviews with newsmakers.
We'll call out the liars, frauds, and phonies, and we'll even give kudos to the good guys
when and if we find any. Stories and ideas you won't hear anywhere else. Join me, Brad Friedman, for the Bradcast every day, right here on Radio Sputnik.
On Sputnik with Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert. Tune in!
Well, maybe mention like central bankers and you know, markets are doubling down. Not you're saying everybody's doubling down. They're crazy.
They are. Everyone's crazy.
Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oddly enough, it's not nonfiction books that seem to animate the right. It's novels, because this vision of America that comes out of the right is something that you have to make up. You know, it's not like you could write a book saying, oh, here's a right-wing country that works really well. Let's emulate them.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Radio Sputnik.
Tune in to Loud and Clear with Brian Becker for the latest news, commentary, and political analysis. What's really behind the political and social crisis gripping the United States and the world? Forget the spoon-fed soundbites from the pundits who know so little about so much. We bring you independent experts, analysts, and activists. Learn what really makes the decision makers take from the boardrooms of Wall Street to the West Wing of the White House. Here is where the people fighting for change speak and are heard loud and clear. 5 days a week on Radio Sputnik and SputnikNews.com.
Hard Facts is a show that gets to the heart of the matter.
We question the mainstream media narrative to get to the truth about world affairs.
I don't think they have a clue what they're doing in Syria.
Basically, it's the sixth attempt by the big powers to overthrow a Middle East government.
Whether it is regime change, masked as revolution, imperialism masked as democracy and human rights. On Hard Facts, we peel back the layers to get to the real story other media doesn't want you to hear.
Absolutely astonishing the British government reacted to this case simply by lying.
Hard Facts.
Radio Sputnik. We speak your language. Find us at sputniknews.com.
You're listening to World in Focus Weekly
with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott.
Your weekly roundup of all the top stories from World in Focus. We've replenished our cups of coffee. Hopefully you have too. Welcome back to World in Focus Weekly. We'll be discussing some of the bigger stories that we were covering on World in Focus over this past week. Radio Sputnik's daily global current affairs show. I'm Jack Foster. With me around this same table is Carolyn Scott and Matthew Ayton. Now, Carolyn, you were looking at the rather strange case of Robert Doggart this week. Fill us in. Who is Robert Doggart?
Well, Robert Doggart is a white American. He ran for Congress in 2014 as an independent in East Tennessee. Mm. 1 year later, in April 2015, he was arrested for plotting an attack on residents in Islamburg. It's a self-named community in upstate New York, consisting primarily of Muslims. And now, according to the court records, authorities discovered that Doggart was trying to recruit people online to burn down a mosque in Islamburg. It's alleged that he talked openly about using AR-15 assault rifles to attack the residents of the town, as he believed it to be a Muslim extremist training camp. His plot, fortunately, was intercepted before he had a chance to act on it and nobody was harmed. But as those in that community are highlighting this week, Doggart will not face any charges of terrorism for the offence. He will face up to 10 years in prison if found guilty on the charges of solicitation to commit arson, solicitation to commit a civil rights violation, and threat in interstate commerce. And this, he's not facing federal terrorism charges, so he's just been on house arrest ever since he was captured. And this is due to what the attorney representing the community refers to as a loophole in their federal laws, in that to be charged with terrorism...
But terrorism isn't terrorism.
Where if you're to be charged with terrorism in America, there has to be a foreign element, element acting
what?
On you. Well, actually, that's
actually the law.
Yeah, and you can hear it a bit better from the attorney I spoke to on Thursday, Tahira Amatul Wadud, and she's representing the community of Islamburg. And I asked her, as you said just now, it sounds a lot like using violence to incite terror in a community. It sounds like terrorism. So I asked her why Mr. Doggart won't be facing terror charges.
Well, he was actually charged back in April 2015 with a series of offenses like solicitation and the use of interstate commerce to solicit violence against the house of worship. But the problem is that in our U.S. code, there isn't actually a criminal charge of domestic terrorism. The charges that our terrorism charges all have an international component. So there's a gap in our laws in that there is no such thing as you are charged with section blah, blah of the U.S. federal code and that section leads to terrorism. It doesn't exist. What is in the code is a definition of terrorism, but it's not a criminal charge.
Mm-hmm. So if this man was from anywhere else in the world, would he be facing terror charges then?
If the prosecution believed that he was motivated by international influences, then they would have what they needed in order to charge him with terrorism, because then there's that international component which meets the elements of terrorism in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine that then there isn't a prejudice here. If this was an American Muslim planning to attack a Christian community, he also wouldn't be convicted of terrorism then.
The difference is what we're finding in our research is that for people who are Muslim or who purport to be Muslim, what the government will often do is find that they have some sympathies towards international terroristic groups like ISIS, Al-Qaeda, or that they've researched on the internet these groups. And that will be sufficient enough to make the leap to international terrorism. So it doesn't take much, just as long as there's some type of connection, even just sympathizing will be sufficient in some cases.
Now, forgive me, but this does seem a little bit perhaps outdated, given that if we look at the terror attacks we've witnessed in the European Union, a lot of them have been EU nationals. Are these laws not perhaps causing authorities to overlook the threats of homegrown terrorism?
It most certainly is, but I believe that it's not inadvertent that domestic terror isn't a charge, because here in the United States, it is well established that the greatest threat to the American people is the extreme right-wing militia, groups like the Ku Klux Klan, for example, and all of these other groups that are popping up. And they will always avoid any terrorism charges because they would be considered homegrown and therefore exempt because they're not influenced by any international actor. It is definitely a double standard. It is definitely unfair, but I believe it is intentionally the law.
And to look at this case now, if Robert Stoggart is found guilty of the charges that he is facing, will that be enough for the people of Islamabad to feel that justice has been served?
At this point, the people of Islamabad are very practical and realistic. And at this point, a conviction on any of the four charges will feel like justice. And what we've also realized is that in addition to using the courts of law for, towards justice and educating the communities and the public as a whole about these threats, because American people have the right to know that this threat is out there, that the extreme right wing is looking to create a massacre on American soil, that this is knowledge is an important component of what the community of Islamabad wants. They want this to be something that is in the public conscience, because initially when this man was first charged, there was no statement from the FBI. There was no publicizing that this had happened. It was the community itself that brought this into the awareness of the media and people who are following it. So that's one component. The second component is that we are really exploring possibly lobbying Congress for a change in the U.S. code to include domestic terror as an actual criminal offense.
Do you know what kind of time frame you're looking on that? Is that something that you're trying to bring forward soon?
Once we are finished with this case, and you know, it's something that we're giving serious consideration to. I think this case in particular has given us the momentum, and the public interest has given us the momentum to call out the double standard and to suggest a solution to it. And we think that the solution is to create such a charge.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that the current White House administration will be sympathetic toward that, though?
No, but that's okay. But sometimes I tell my clients, it's not what they say, it's that we said it.
Well, Tahira Amatul Woodward, thank you very much for your time today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
That was Carolyn talking to Tahira Woodward.
Yes, it was. And it was a very interesting interview, that one. I'd seen the story first thing in the morning and reached out to Tahira to see if she was free for a chat. And I initially thought that, as you kind of do, think this must have some kind of racist element to it. But only if you assume that, because you can be charged on terror offences if there's a foreign influence. So if the police can prove that you have been influenced by somebody out with America to commit an act of terrorism, then you're charged on terror offences. Now, if they don't prove that, then you're not charged on terror offences. So you've got to ask yourself, really, if you want to say there's a racist element, you have to assume that the authorities would only go searching for a foreign element when they want to.
I was always under the impression that terrorism was terrorism. It was the act of terrorism,
yep,
and has nothing to do with where it comes from.
It's just a strange thing in the federal state laws.
It reminds me of something that happened last year in New York. There were some nail bombs that had been set off in the underground, and the mayor at the time, I don't remember his name, said, this is an attack, but we're not treating it as an act of terrorism. Mm. And I found that completely bewildering. This obviously, someone has set out with the intention of disrupting civilian life, harming people.
And invoking terror in people.
And it leads one to the conclusion that terrorism is really synonymous with foreigner or even Muslim. Mm.
Well, I think that's certainly become the case in a lot of media coverage of terrorism, is that there is always that moment, as you say, when you hear about a terror attack and they always sort of say, we're not sure if this is terrorism just yet, we're waiting to hear. And of course, you're looking at it and thinking, well, it's obvious to terrorism. Mm. What you mean is we're not sure if a Muslim person did this.
The thing that I wonder about is that in this day and age, obviously we are all on social media, you've got this huge interconnected world. Surely if you have a far-right white supremacist that commits an act that you would be defined as terrorism, there would be evidence of them having discussed their beliefs and viewpoints and plans with somebody out with their own country. I mean, the idea that they didn't... is a bit daft, but that's what they do, and
that's
they have
a very
done.
Legal way of looking at it, though. I mean, surely the law in and of itself is a little bit odd.
Yes, absolutely. And, well, Tahira Amatowadud was saying that they're going to try and lobby the Congress to do something about that, but, you know, that's a long process. And also, as I said to her, do you really think that the Trump administration is going to be open to those kinds of things getting changed in their federal laws? I don't think it's top of their list.
And have a lot of the attacks that have been carried out in the United States over the last few years not been predominantly, if not exclusively, carried out by American citizens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And like I was saying there as well, if you know, the attacks in the EU, they were EU nationals that carried them out. And it does make you get a little bit concerned that if the law is written like this, then are your law enforcement agencies overlooking the threat of homegrown terrorism? Because it is a major threat.
Well, we will have to leave that one there. After the break, when you have another chance to fill up your coffee, that's what I'll be doing, that's what we'll all be doing. We will be talking about World Radio Day, which of course hit us this past week and we were all celebrating it. Matthew, you took you a few days to recover, I think, didn't you?
It did.
So we have some special interviews about that after the break.
You're listening to World in Focus Weekly
with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott.
Your weekly roundup of all the top stories from World in Focus.
Coming up after the break, as Jack has just mentioned, we will be talking about all things radio, as last Monday was World Radio Day.
Radio Sputnik.
Capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Ray Bradbury, the author of Fahrenheit 451, once wrote, "If you don't want a man unhappy politically, don't give him two sides to question to worry him. Give him one. Better yet, give him none. Let him forget there's such a thing as war." Level Talk program has been devised to offer two sides to any argument. We don't want to make up your mind for you, but we do want to be sure that you know both sides of any story. Tune in to Level Talk.
Mainstream news coverage catches the big moments.
60 people confirmed dead.
Brexit means Brexit.
We will make America great again.
But what about the stories behind the stories?
The untold stories hidden beneath the mainstream.
Several hundred guys on voluntary starvation.
Intelligence agencies cannot admit they make a mistake.
If they tell me back, I will be killed myself.
Sputnik's daily global current affairs programme, World in Focus, with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott.
Join us live from Sputnik Studios in Edinburgh, Scotland, every weekday from 4 p.m. in the UK, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and 7 o'clock in Moscow.
Hey, this is Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist,
troublemaker, and muckraker from bradblog.com.
Join me for the Bradcast. Every day, right here on Radio Sputnik,
we'll have investigative interviews with newsmakers.
We'll call out the liars, frauds, and phonies, and we'll even give kudos to the good guys
when and if we find any.
Stories and ideas you won't hear anywhere else. Join me, Brad Friedman, for the Bradcast every day, right here on Radio Sputnik.
I'm Sputnik with Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert. Tune in.
Well, maybe mention like central bankers and you know markets are doubling down. Not you're saying everybody's doubling down. They're crazy.
They are. Everyone's crazy.
Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
oddly enough, it's not nonfiction books that seem to animate the right. It's novels, because this vision of America that comes out of the right is something that you have to make up. You know, it's not like you could write a book saying, oh, here's a right-wing country that works really well. Let's emulate them.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Radio Sputnik.
Tune in to Loud and Clear with Brian Becker for the latest news, commentary, and political analysis. What's really behind the political and social crisis gripping the United States and the world? Forget the spoon-fed soundbites from the pundits who know so little about so much. We bring you independent experts, analysts, and activists. Learn what really makes the decision-makers take from the boardrooms of Wall Street to the West Wing of the White House. Here is where the people fighting for change speak and are heard loud and clear. 5 days a week on Radio Sputnik and SputnikNews.com.
Hard Facts is a show that gets to the heart of the matter. We question the mainstream media narrative to get to the truth about world affairs.
I don't think they have a clue what they're doing in Syria.
Basically, it's the sixth attempt by the big powers to overthrow a Middle East government.
Whether it is regime change, masked as revolution, imperialism masked as democracy and human rights. On Hard Facts, we peel back the layers to get to the real story other media doesn't want you to hear.
Absolutely astonishing the British government reacted to this case simply by lying.
Hard Facts.
Radio Sputnik. We speak your language. Find us at SputnikNews.com.
Listening to World in Focus Weekly
with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott.
Your weekly roundup of all the top stories from World in Focus.
Welcome back. Still to come on this week's programme, we will be taking a look back to what was Radio Day last week with some interviews from a former MP turned television presenter and radio presenter and a radio futurologist.
Yes,
Jack. Oh, sorry.
No. After you, Carolyn.
I was just going to say, Jack, you got quite into Radio Day on Monday, didn't you? You got quite excited by it.
I did. Well, as we, you know, it comes but once a year. It's one of the happiest times of the year. We all get together and sit around the table, have our Radio Day meal, Radio Day gifts.
And Sputnik.
As ever, I left my Radio Day shopping to the last minute.
Sputnik went to great lengths to celebrate Radio Day. We had a marathon around the globe.
Through our different bureaus around the planet Earth. We celebrated it in style. And one of the ways that we celebrated it here was with two interviews on radio and the wonders of radio, which we're going to hear in just a moment. Before we do, it's probably worth pointing out that the voice you hear conducting those interviews is our very own producer, Craig Johnston, who is not normally on this side of the microphone. But
it does a damn good job at it.
And, for World Radio Day, it's all hands on deck.
Absolutely.
So let's hear them first, and then we'll talk radio afterwards.
Радио – это вы.
Не тюши тупо, ла радио – сей вы.
Винком, обиком.
На радио – это вы.
Radio is you. On February 13th, Sputnik and UNESCO are celebrating the World Radio Day. Tune in to Sputnik's Radio Marathon across all time zones in multiple languages. We will be joined by bloggers and radio experts who will speak out together with you. Tune in, follow Sputnik on Facebook and Twitter, and visit our website at www.sputniknews.com. Sputnik, telling the untold.
Sputnik Radio is celebrating UNESCO's World Radio Day, and I'm joined on the line by politician and broadcaster George Galloway. Welcome, George.
Thanks. Great opportunity.
Nice to have you on air, as always. And radio's certainly changed, hasn't it, over the past decade or so, from AM broadcasting and shortwave to DAB and DAB+. How do you see radio changing and evolving in the future?
Well, you know, there was a song some decades ago called Video Killed the Radio Star. And now it's video that's dead and radio's going from strength to strength. And personally, I'm glad about that because radio fills a space that nothing else really can fill. You have the opportunity of serious programming with the opportunity of dropping in breaking news. And as people are generally not sat in front of their television. They're either at work or driving or have other things that they need to do while they're at home. They can still get what you get from radio, which is intimate, a voice in your own room or in your own car, and you can get some fantastic programming. Myself, back working in radio now, and over the last 10 years, I've broadcast well over 1,000 shows live on radio, and I just love it because it gives me a more intimate connection with the listener than I would get any other way, either on television or in public meetings, which I do a lot of as well, because it's just me and the listener. And in my own case, I've now got an audience that literally switches off their TV in order to listen to a radio show. I've also got on YouTube clips from radio shows with in excess of 1 million, sometimes multiple million listeners. So it shows the impact of radio. And Sputnik Radio, to which I don't really contribute, but I'm a big, avid listener, is a perfect example of the genre I'm describing here. You can get serious talk programs with the ability to get the news as well. And I'm looking forward to being a customer of Sputnik Radio for many years to come.
Fantastic, George. And UNESCO is all about building freedom of expression. When people contact you at a radio station by phoning you or tweeting you or any kind of social media message, it must give you and the listener a great sense of empowerment and freedom.
Definitely, and it's unfiltered. Even though my own radio station is owned by a multi-billionaire oligarch, nobody ever interferes in my show, and nobody ever interferes in the feedback to my show. So I have, for 3 whole hours, a completely full switchboard and a proliferation of texts and tweets and so on. So you know instantly what the response, the reaction is from the public that are listening. It really is a fantastically democratic form of communication. And you don't need that much money to open and sustain a radio show. The costs of entry into radio with the internet and so on, fantastically small with what used to be, and by comparison, still with television. In the next 10 years, and I hope still to be blowing over the next 10 years, anyone will be able to set up a radio show, and then 1,000 flowers will really bloom.
Do you think internet radio broadcasting then is the way ahead, and does it have the power to influence politics?
Well, it doesn't yet have the power either to influence politics as much as it will, and it doesn't have the quality of signal and of sound. But the developments in technology are such that I'm perfectly sure that by 2027, let me put that as a deadline, there will be thousands of internet radio stations listened to by millions.
Let's take that year, 2027. How do you think people will engage with you when you're still on the radio then, George?
The development in Britain since the dawn of the internet is truly phenomenal. I spent most of the first half of my life driving all over the country to speak to an audience of 100, if you were lucky, in a cold hall somewhere. I spoke in a cold hall in Easter House in Glasgow on Sunday night past, and there wasn't 100 people in the hall, not least because it was bitterly cold. But 598,000 people watched my Q&A session on the internet. That is just exponential. I mean, if not for the internet and the developments in broadcasting technology, I would have spent my whole life driving around the country at some risk and cost to speak to far fewer than I can speak to in a single night, thanks to the wonders of new technology.
Radio really is that special medium, isn't it? That one-on-one medium. There may be millions listening, but it's still got that one-on-one connection, hasn't it?
Exactly. And you get, usually, longer. A long interview on the television, a long one on the mainstream broadcaster, will be 3 minutes. I have guests on for half an hour. My show lasts for 3 hours. And quite often, it could easily go on for another 3, certainly another 2. And every one of those consumers of what it is that you're saying or arguing about is an individual consumer. They're not in a mass meeting. They didn't have to be selected. Neither did they have to select themselves, really. They are just sitting at home or they're driving in their car. And, for example, a lot of cab drivers listen to my show. In London, there are 35,000 black cab drivers and probably 100,000 mini cab drivers. How's that for a captive audience? If you get the name of being worth listening to, then you've got that as a bedrock audience across a great city like London.
Fantastic, George. As always, it's fascinating to talk to you, and thanks for taking the time
to
speak to us. Thank you.
All the best.
Radio, это вы. Не тоже тупо. La radio, c'est vous. Винком,
обиком. La radio, c'est vous.
Radio is you. On February 13th, Sputnik and UNESCO are celebrating the World Radio Day. Tune in to Sputnik's Radio Marathon across all time zones in multiple languages. We will be joined by bloggers and radio experts who will speak out together with you. Tune in, follow Sputnik on Facebook and Twitter, and visit our website at www.sputniknews.com. Sputnik, telling the untold.
Sputnik Radio is celebrating UNESCO's World Radio Day, and I'm joined on the line by radio futurologist James Cridland. Welcome, James, to Sputnik Radio.
Hiya, it's great to be here.
Thank you, nice to have you on. Now, just a couple of decades ago, some were predicting the demise of radio. However, that's far from the case, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, it's really interesting. If you look back in history, people didn't really think that radio would go anywhere. And of course, television came along and everybody thought, well, that's it for radio. Then the Walkman came along and everybody thought, well, that's it for radio. And now computers and Spotify and all this kind of stuff is coming along. And radio is still going really, really strongly. If you look in the UK, 90% of people are still tuning into the radio every single week. In places like Malaysia, that's even higher at about 96%. 7%. So radio is still really important and a really unique medium that loads of people are still enjoying every single week.
Absolutely. And with the advent of digital radio, cable, the internet, DAB, there's a greater choice of radio than ever before, and it's easier to listen to. But which platform do you think is the way forward?
I think all of them. And I know that that's a little bit of a cop-out, but I really do think that actually one of the things that people have woken up to is that radio isn't just AM or FM. That's not the business that radio is in. Radio is in the business of making great content and making that content available in as many different ways as you possibly can. And so DAB, a new way of broadcasting that lots of European countries and indeed here in Australia, where I currently am, you know, DAB is being used all over the place. There's other systems called DRM, which is in use in India, satellite radio in the US and so on. But really, all of it is just radio on a different platform, on a platform that audiences want. And that's the important part. So really, radio is entering a much more multi-platform world, but it's still radio. It's still a great way to communicate with people, to connect with other human beings, and to, you know, and to have that great shared experience that great radio can give you.
Well, great radio informs us, entertains us, gives the public a voice. Do you think that will continue to be the case as we move forward?
Oh, I think absolutely, definitely. I think that, you know, radio has a place in our life that actually very few other media have. You know, radio is typically the first thing that we wake up to. It's the thing that keeps us sane while we're in the car. If we're working in a factory, if we're sitting doing the ironing or whatever, then radio is there to keep us company. So radio, I think, has a tremendous future if, of course, broadcasters remember what radio is great at, and that's a shared experience and that human connection. And the human connection is a really important thing.
Well, that's interesting you talk about the human connection, because visuals are increasingly important on radio now. For example, on smartphone apps, can visuals increase a station's audience and enhance the listening experience?
I think that, you know, visuals are important. You know, anything that gets great radio content out to people who aren't necessarily consuming it is really important. And so what you'll see is you'll see lots of radio stations who are continually videoing what they're doing, just in case it actually makes a really nice clip that they can then share on Facebook or on Twitter data. Typically, people don't share pieces of audio. People share bits of video because, you know, they're using Facebook or Twitter or VK or any of those services on a computer that has a screen on it. You know, so therefore, you want something that's right for that particular medium. But, you know, video is one side. Making radio on demand, of course, is another side, and podcasting is a big part of that. All of it is really making sure that radio reaches audiences in places where audiences, you know, want to consume it and in ways that audiences want to consume it. And part of that is on demand. Part of that is adding visuals and more information. Part of that is just using a different way of actually getting the audio out there.
Fantastic. And let's look into your crystal ball. In 10 years from now, how do you think a listener will tune in or engage with a radio station?
Well, now, 10 years is a long, long way into the future, You know, I mean, it's interesting. I've been looking at where the future of radio has been going now for 15, 20 years or so. And everywhere I go, every different country I go to, I always find something new and something interesting. You know, if you go and talk in the US, you find that younger audiences are listening to a bit less radio maybe than they used to. They're still tuning in, but they're just tuning in a little bit less. I was in Moscow a couple of years ago, and radio is incredibly successful with young audiences, not that successful with older audiences. So the differences, depending on where you go in the world, is really interesting. And I think that that bodes well for where the future of radio is going. I think that there'll still be an awful lot of live radio, an awful lot of broadcast radio. I think that that is definitely still the major part of where radio is going. But I do think that we're going to see more on-demand radio, more podcasting, sure, but also more personalized experiences as well. You know, a radio station, for example, that I can listen to that knows that I really like Queen, but I really don't like Keane, for example, and so will never ever play me a Keane song. That kind of thing is actually possible now. There are some broadcasters who are already doing it, and I think that personalization is going to be a big part of the future as we go ahead. But really, World Radio Day is all about talking to audiences on both ways, making sure that radio listeners understand what radio is all about, but also on the other side, making sure that radio broadcasters listen to what their audiences are telling them and make sure that they're producing some great audio and some great programming for the audience who is already tuning in.
Radio's changed dramatically over the past 10, 15 years. It's all about content. It's all about the listener now, and it seems to be driving more and more in that direction. But also about sound quality. Do you think we're coming closer to the end of AM and FM, and we'll move to DAB and DAB Plus only alongside podcasting and on-demand radio?
I think that there are still quite a few people around the world who are still tuning in on shortwave, let alone on AM. So I think that, you know, sound quality isn't necessarily something that is as massively important as some of the technologists think that it might be. You know, at the end of the day, it's the right platform for the audience. And if the audience can only pick up an AM signal, as indeed they can in great parts of Australia, you know, as one example, you know, AM works perfectly fine. But what I do think that we will see is, particularly in countries in Europe, they are already turning off AM. They will continue to turn off AM as the years go on, partially because it's very expensive and partially because actually people are tuning in less to it. And most countries are moving over onto FM. Norway is just beginning to switch off FM this year and moving over to DAB only. So by the end of this year, you won't be able to listen to almost any radio on your FM radio in Norway. It'll all be on a DAB set. And that means, of course, that you'll have to rush out and buy yourself a brand new radio. But it's certainly something that it's interesting seeing the Norwegians actually doing. But, you know, I mean, I think really what we are going to see is we're just going to see lots of different ways of people tuning into radio. And probably we'll end up with a position where if you're a radio broadcaster, you need to be on five or six different platforms in order to make sure that audiences can actually hear you where and when they want to.
That's absolutely fascinating. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Sputnik.
It's a great pleasure.
That was James Cridland speaking to our very own Craig Johnston there, celebrating.
James Cridland.
Sorry?
Did you said Craig Cridland?
I said Craig Johnston.
Oh, I'm sorry. I could have sworn you said Craig Cridland.
We'll
James
have a record
Cridland.
Of it on the tape, Carolyn. This is, in many ways, a great illustration of the beauty of radio.
Absolutely.
Is that a futurologist the same as, like, a mixologist?
I don't think so.
All right. It's got ologists in it. So, radio. Matthew, how did you celebrate World Radio Day?
Well, the same as I always do, rushing around the city centre with family, getting the gifts together, making sure the turkey's in the oven nice and early.
We could keep treading water with this metaphor right up to the end of the show.
I hope so.
I thought that there are a few really interesting things to look at from the interviews there, in that we have changed the way we consume radio so much over the decades, in that we now have a radio in our pocket. You know, we have if you've got your phone on you, you've pretty much got a radio with you all times. But radio has changed.
We also learned that George Galloway has a lot of listeners to his
show. We did. But no, I think it's interesting that radio hasn't really changed. I mean, you could listen to a broadcast from 50 years ago and you would recognise every single element of it. The way that these, especially with news programming and things like that, it's all the exact same as it was, but the way we consume it is very different.
Well, I would say it's probably changed a little bit in 50 years, the way that radio news works.
Not massively.
If we went back in time and played an episode of World in Focus to people in the 1960s, I think they would think, what is this crazy futuristic sounding thing?
But what is it about radio that gives it that sort of timelessness, do you think?
Well, you can't see anything, I suppose. That's the beauty of it. I mean, you know, on television, if this was on television, we'd all be in a studio that would have to be sort of built and look really good. We'd all have to be wearing sort of very smart clothing. As it stands, you know, we're all in just boxer shorts and t-shirts here. But no one knows it. I mean, you know, just assume.
No, well, but you're a radio lover, Jack, and I know you listen to radio very regularly. You know, what would you hope for the future of radio? What would your hopes be if you could, you know, use modern technology to develop something new for radio?
If I could develop something new for radio? Well, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, I would hope that radio continues to live on just as long as it has done, and if not further into the future, because I think it is one of the most powerful mediums for communication. I think the internet seems to me like where the future could be. I think it's far more easy now. It's a medium which has become much more democratized over the years. You know, that would be the major difference, I would say, with 50 years ago. 50 years ago, radio was very centrally controlled by very few organizations, very few people that could actually do it, a very specialist thing. Now you can run a podcast or a radio thing from your house. It's
one of the things that might be interesting to see is the way that now you're beginning to see people who make podcasts that are very successful trying to have subscriptions for podcasts, things like that, so that lots of young startups that are doing good radio content, but not on traditional radio, but just as podcasts, really struggle to maintain it and to keep it going. And there are a few schemes now that are like a Spotify type system for podcasting, which will be really interesting to see how they develop, and how radio really kind of harnesses the internet in that way.
The internet's very young, I think, still, though, and we're not quite sure where it's going to go. I mean, when you look at just the developments in the last 10 years with regards to the music industry on the internet, with regards to how people consume video on the internet, I mean, that has changed massively. You know, 10 years ago, Spotify or Netflix would have seemed just unworkable. You wouldn't have been able to imagine how on earth you could do that. It just seemed like, you know, the downloading of music online was just a problem. It was just, oh, well, there's no way that anyone is ever going to be able to work out a way of doing this legally, because it's far too convenient to do it illegally. Along came Spotify and similar things. Netflix did the same thing for video. I think radio podcast is a bit different, because obviously you don't really, generally speaking, you don't really pay to consume them. And maybe that is the future, if it's to become more democratized.
Well, I hope you wouldn't have to pay to consume radio. I mean, I think that especially current affairs broadcasting, I think it is incredibly important that it is accessible to all. I think if you are in a situation where you are living in, you know, poverty and you couldn't afford to pay for these things, you shouldn't be further alienated by not having access to news medium and things like that. I think radio is important. It should be. Obviously, it's not entirely free because you have to buy a radio.
Well, then that brings in the other question of, like, free internet, which is a thing that has been talked about, bringing in free Wi-Fi throughout cities and things. Mm. I think there's a very good argument for that. Yeah, there are some cities that have already done it, are there not?
Well, you can get it in the city centre of Edinburgh. There's, if you're on Princes Street, there's Edinburgh free Wi-Fi.
I thought you meant For households.
But yes.
Well, yeah, yeah, no, I think that is the idea. There is certainly a movement that's moving towards that, the idea of having just on lampposts, having Wi-Fi transmitters and things. I think some cities actually do have that already. I've heard of it existing. I can see why certain companies might be reluctant to do that. Anyway, we got slightly diverted there on the subject of radio, but a fascinating conversation. But sadly, that is all we have time for on this week's programme. You can, though, listen again to this and to previous shows at sputniknews.com/radio.
This is Radio Sputnik in Edinburgh. Tune in to World in Focus every day, 11 a.m. in Washington, Miami and New York, 4 p.m. in London, and live online at sputniknews.com. And until next time, from myself, Carolyn Scott.
From me, Jack Foster.
And from me, Matthew Ayton.
Smooth.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
We are talking
24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
You are listening.
We give you the most essential out of the endless information space.
Radio Sputnik, telling the untold.
Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Black mayor, black chief of police. I would say the thing that is missing is a black middle class who actually have good manufacturing jobs in the area, which just doesn't exist because of our insane trade policies. We have run up this multi-trillion dollar trade deficit. We buy all this junk from low-wage countries. They end up with our dollars. They don't want to buy anything we make, so they come over here and they buy our buildings and whatnot. You can't have a middle class if you don't have manufacturing.
This is the Tom Hartman Program
on Radio Sputnik.
Mainstream news coverage catches the big moments.
60 people confirmed dead.
Brexit means Brexit.
We will make America great again.
But what about the stories behind the stories?
The untold stories hidden beneath the mainstream.
Several hundred guys on voluntary starvation.
Intelligence agencies cannot admit they make a mistake.
If they tell me, I will be killed myself.
Sputnik's daily global current affairs programme, World in Focus, with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott.
Join us live from Sputnik Studios in Edinburgh, Scotland, every weekday from 4 p.m. in the UK, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 7 o'clock in Moscow.
Hi, this is Max Kaiser for Double Down. New show on Sputnik with Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert. Everybody's doubling down. Central bankers are doubling down. Gambleaholics are doubling down. Everyone's doubling down. Why don't you double down? Right here at Sputnik with a new show called Double Down with Max and Stacey. Bye, y'all.
Hard Facts is a show that gets to the heart of the matter. We question the mainstream media narrative to get to the truth about world affairs.
I don't think they have a clue what they're doing in Syria.
Basically, it's the sixth attempt by the big powers to overthrow a Middle East government.
Whether it is regime change, masked as revolution, imperialism masked as democracy and human rights. On Hard Facts, we peel back the layers to get to the real story other media doesn't want you to hear.
Absolutely astonishing the British government reacted to this case simply by lying.
Hard Facts.
Capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Ray Bradbury, the author of Fahrenheit 451, once wrote, "If you don't want a man unhappy politically, don't give him two sides to a question to worry him. Give him one. Better yet, give him none. Let him forget there's such a thing as war." Level Talk program has been devised to offer two sides to any argument. We don't want to make up your mind for you, but we do want to be sure that you know both sides of any story. Tune in to Level Talk.
Catch all the breaking global political and economic news as it happens. Sputnik brings an all-star lineup with expert opinion from some of the biggest names in the news today. Noam Chomsky.
Turkey, U.S. ally, their main goal is to attack the Kurds, the one ground force opposing ISIS. And there have been a kind of a funnel for support of ISIS, not officially, but in practice.
Peter Sunde, co-founder of the Pirate Bay.
We don't have any sort of democratic control over the internet. And I think that we're very naive when we think that the internet itself is intrinsically good. It's not. It's just a very neutral technology that is being used for good things, but more and more being used for evil things.
Icelandic Foreign Minister Gunnar Bragi Sveinsson.
We increase activities in Keflavik Air Base, and that has to do with more activities from the Russian Northern Fleet in the ocean around Iceland, and also, of course, these usual flights of the bombers.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
we're the ones that destroyed the government of Libya. We're the ones in a pipeline dispute that helped destroy the government of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. We're the ones who invaded Iraq.
Former U.S. Secretary of Defense William Perry.
The hostile relationship between the United States and Russia today is dangerous for both countries, not because either country would actually want to start a military conflict, but because there's always a danger of blundering.
Sputnik talks to the brightest minds in politics and current affairs to find out what's really happening. Tune in.